Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome everybody to another edition of CMC Radio. I'm your host, Rob May. It's 6 p.m. here on the East Coast in New York, and I hope everyone is having a good Monday so far. Hope the week started off right for everybody. I know for myself it was a little rough, but, you know, we'll get into that later. Right now, we have Samantha Inesta of BeASisterToASister.org back for another episode with us, part of the extended series. Samantha, how you doing tonight?
Doing well.
Great. It's good to have you back on the show. This is actually part 9 of the extended series that we'll be doing with Samantha. And the really, as I mentioned time and time again when we have her on the show, BeASisterToASister.org is the website. The organization itself is trying to do some amazing things, and there's certainly a lot of stuff going on in the world, you know, that everyone's aware of. But you know, maybe this might be something that is underneath the radar of a lot of people, and that being human trafficking, and you know, women especially being kind of stuck and used and abused in so many different ways. You know what? Why don't we get to Samantha just to tell us a little bit about the organization, what you guys have done, and you know, how you guys have been trying to make an impact here.
Okay, so we are an aftercare program for survivors. What we do is we provide extended counseling, extended job services, extended health care, legal services, and all of that. We also put together survivor networks. We help survivors get themselves on their feet, help them to enroll back in school if they so desire, or to find a job, and to just, you know, keep them on that healing path instead of, you know, just them going out there with no resources and not knowing where to go. So we kind of pick up where other programs leave off.
Sure, sure. And now, as far as the healing process goes, and I know that this is a tough question for you because it's different for everybody, but on average, how long do you see the healing process taking people?
Well, it depends on the situation. So if the situation that they were in was really a very horrific situation, it could take upwards of 10 years with some girls.
Yeah.
Some girls, it could take them, you know, a year, 2 years. But I've been seeing, from the girls that I've been dealing with, it's taking them quite some time. It's taking them even more than 2 years.
Right.
I mean, and then there are some girls that have still not completely healed, and it's been 10 years, but they are moving forward with their life because they know that they can't stay in that state and expect to really have a future. So they deal with it the best way that they can, and of course we're always here for them.
Of course. And Samantha, now, what kind of obstacles are people facing in the healing process? I know that there's a slew of them, and I know that you guys work directly with people to try to get them over it. But, I mean, what type of things are they faced with at this point?
Well, some of the things that they're faced with is basically what people would call triggers. So any little thing can trigger them, and it could be something that's very innocent to us, but it's something that's very significant to them when they were being trafficked. It could be a piece of clothing. It could be a certain smell. It could be a song. It could be a place. It could be even just something someone says. So those triggers sometimes are very hard for a lot of girls to deal with. Some of the girls are actually on medication in order to be able to deal with that, so they don't, you know, have an episode when they see or hear something that triggers what has happened to them. That's one of the biggest obstacles. And, of course, you know, it's flashbacks, it's nightmares. It's a lot of the psychological brainwashing that's been done to them, and, you know, just the fact that they feel that they can't be or do anything else. Those are some of the biggest hurdles. So it's the constant, you know, having to tell them that they're more than that, that they can have a future and that they can have a good life. So that's some of the biggest obstacles, you know, because in essence, they're basically reliving it over and over again, and that's what we want to stop. We want to stop them from having to relive that nightmare over and over again.
Right. And so aside from the obstacles, you know, what else would you say are the most important things, you know, to trafficking survivors and really, you know, in meeting their immediate needs? I mean, what goes into that?
Well, they need someone that's basically going to give them love and that's going to listen to them and that's not going to judge them. That is the biggest thing. Is they, a lot of survivors are afraid of judgment because unfortunately there are some people that do judge. You know, sometimes when a survivor gets a job somewhere, when her employer finds out what had happened, you know,
right.
instead of looking at her as someone who survived, they automatically assume that, oh, that's what she wanted to do and that's what she is and I can't have that person in my business, and then they end up getting fired. You know, and there's nothing that they can do about it because, you know, a lot of employers are very smart. They do it in a way where they can't get sued. You
right,
know, so that's one of the things. I mean, do not be judgmental. Listen to
right.
everything that they say. And, you know, and even if they do slip up and do something, you know, again, don't be judgmental. Don't attack them. Just help
right.
them to get back on their feet again.
Well, now, you know, it's not necessarily something that people would have to divulge, right? I mean, this isn't, you don't have to share that you're
no,
a trafficking
you don't.
Survivor
you don't.
Necessarily.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes things happen, you know, there might be a person that might have something against her and might
right,
contact
right.
her employer and say, you know, she used to do this, this, and this, and twist
sure.
it all around, and things like that can happen. So.
Wow, that's terrible.
Yeah.
And so, Samantha, then with you know, with the services that Be a Sister to a Sister provides, in terms of meeting these needs, you know, I know that you work with other people, obviously other organizations, and I know
right.
that you've been able to do things for people across the globe. I mean, this is not just a New York thing where you guys are based out of. You know, this is, and obviously, you know, I'm fascinated by the idea of where the greatest amount of trafficking occurs, because obviously it's kind of everywhere at this point, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But so how exactly do you guys provide the things that are needed for people? I mean, you know, what would you say in that instance where you get a girl that, you know, she's
uh-huh.
surviving it and she had a job
right.
and now she comes to you and
mm-hmm.
says, I lost my job over this. What do I do? I mean, what can
right.
a person like that do?
It's collaboration with different agencies. And also, too, again, she has to be able to prove it. If she can prove it, we will get her a lawyer, and she will basically try to get her job back. But, you know, 9 times out of 10, when something like that happens, if they can prove it, they really don't want their job back, because even if they get it back, they're going to get treated differently. You know, they're
right.
not going to get treated the way they were before. But I think that they still want to do it just to send a message that, like, listen, you can't do this to me. I'm a person just like anyone else, you know. So it's
sure.
really basically collaboration with agencies, collaboration with certain other organizations that are willing to collaborate with us. And that's really what it is, because, you know, one organization cannot do everything. You know,
mm-hmm.
you need others to come in and help and do their share. So that's really
right.
how we give the girls what they need. It's just by simple collaboration.
And collaboration now with, is it government agencies or is it other
yeah,
similar groups
yeah,
to yourself?
Basically. Yeah, basically like certain other government agencies like the Brooklyn DA's office,
mm-hmm.
other social work agencies. There are pro bono legal services and other smaller organizations that will provide a certain need for the survivors.
Very nice. Now Samantha, I'm curious to know, you know, in terms of what your biggest obstacles are for the organization, you know, to
mm-hmm.
deal with trafficking, what are some of the things that you have to overcome now to kind of really put your best foot forward here and make a serious impact?
like a lot of organizations, the biggest obstacle, and I said it before, and you know, but it is a big obstacle, is funding. Funding is the
mm-hmm.
biggest obstacle.
Sure.
And it is for a lot of organizations, but especially for those organizations that are trying to really put their best foot forward and really go out there and start a good
right.
program. The biggest obstacle is that, you know, I'm not huge. I'm not well known. Donors are not used to seeing me. You know, people that normally give grants don't really know. And it's very hard to get your foot in the door as far as funding goes, especially in a city like New York, because, you know, you have to know the right donors. You have to know the right people. You know, it really is very, very hard work. You know, that's why you see some people, you know, doing whatever they can and trying to get themselves out there in any way that they can. And it's not that, you know, we want to be in the spotlight. We don't. Mm-hmm. It's just that we just want to get the funding and we want the work to speak for ourselves. Like, we don't want to speak for ourselves. We want the work to speak for us. You know,
of course.
Me personally, I'm not looking to be a celebrity. I don't want to be on the cover of any magazine. I just want the funding so I can help these girls. That's first and foremost. Because the things that I see and the way that I interact with these girls, I mean, I really want to be able to help them more. And the biggest obstacle that's holding me down is funding. Everything else is good, but with funding, I can do so much more and just get them more services and really meet their needs in a more efficient way.
Sure. What have you been doing as far as, you know, is there any sort of network, events or anything like that that you guys try to get your name out to that you can at least, you know, be a part of that can help?
Well, we do it all the time. Everywhere. We do it all the time. And I think that because funding sometimes is so scarce, people are a little afraid to use your name or to allow you to put your name out there as well. And so that's what makes it hard because everyone's trying to get at the same funding.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And Samantha, now I'm on your website. And again, for everyone that's listening or just joining us, it's beatsister2asister.org. You know, a lot of really interesting things are on here, and I like the fact that you do make it very clear, very plain and simple, you know, as far as contacting the White House and other government agencies on there that I'm seeing now, you know, just after I ask the question, because it's, you know, that seems to be the best way to really handle it, you know, just put people a click of a button away. Actually, I'm seeing, too, the letter that you guys had written up, too, that you have here, which goes to the Boko Haram, you know, after that whole incident with the girls, the schoolgirls.
Right, absolutely. They're still missing.
So. Yep. Crazy stuff. Now, another thing that I was curious about, Samantha, with regard to the judiciary system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so we have an issue, obviously. I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of issues, a lot of perception issues is what it would be, right? I mean, what is, in your mind, the big problem with the judiciary system right now?
So here's the thing. I mean, there are incidences where girls will be approached by a pimp or another pimp, and, you know, they will engage in a conversation with them, not willingly, and there could be an altercation. And some of these girls, you know, they walk with protection. And so as they're trying to defend themselves, the cops come and look at them as the criminal and let the pimp go. And this girl will be taken in front of the court, and she will tell her story. They know her history, and she will tell them what happened, but yet she will still be ostracized. And the whole time, the pimp walks free.
Mm-hmm.
But meanwhile, this guy was actually trying to coerce her. But because she was trying to defend herself, you know, all they see is some crazy young girl trying to hurt this guy. And no matter what she says to law enforcement, they're not listening to her. And they let this guy go, and he goes back, and he continues the work that he's doing with these other girls, and she gets put in front of the judge. And when she tells the story, it's almost like it's just completely dismissed. You know, it's like the fault of anything that happens always gets put on her.
Right.
You know, and it can't be that way. There's too many of these guys that are just getting loose.
Why is that the case, though? I don't understand.
I mean, when it comes to big trafficking rings, you know, they're very good at taking them down. They have FBI and everything, and you know, and they take these people down, and that's great. But for some reason, when it comes to individual situations, that's where the problems are. They tend to look at them again as troubled young women, and, you know, they're just out of their mind. And, you know, some of them, they'll give them a slap on the wrist and they say, if I see you in here again, you're going to jail. But they still fail to understand that she's only there because she was protecting herself from a pimp that they let walk. And that's what they don't seem to understand sometimes.
Yeah, it's almost unbelievable that stuff like that actually happens.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of things that happen.
But now, so again, with that then, Samantha, what can people do? And what is the answer here?
I mean, the answer here again is that they need to go back to the drawing board with these trafficking courts and figure out a better solution how to deal with this, because this is just not working. That's the only solution.
Yeah. Very strange. And again, you know, it's shocking to me that people are able to kind of get away with all that.
Mm-hmm.
And the perception of the girl is really the problem.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. I mean, you set this up to protect these girls, but then you're treating them as criminals, so I don't understand it either.
Now, as far as police involvement, I know that you, you know, there's obviously some issue there, and I can imagine that possibly if the police were handling it a little differently and able to you know, verify that, okay, this is what's going on. The woman is being solicited for something. What can they do? How can the police help the situation? And what type of training or anything like that do you think can happen?
Well, I mean, they need training on recognizing victims of sex trafficking. I mean, this is a debate that has been going on for years now, and, you know, we're always getting pushback. They just need training in general. That's really what it is. They need to know how to identify a trafficking victim or a survivor. They need to know how to identify it. You know, they can't just assume that it's just, you know, some young girl just trying to hurt some guy, especially if he's so much older than her. You know, obviously that's a giveaway right there. She's a young girl and he's like maybe 40-something years old. You know, I mean, there's an issue there. They need to really be very open to that. You know, it's the same argument that has been going on for the longest time. They need training, period.
Right. You know, and I wonder if they're, you know, if the police department would actually be honest with themselves enough, you know, to actually take that on. You know, it sounds like the approach might be more, oh, you know, this is what the way it is and this is what happens. But maybe maybe they could kind of rethink their process.
Well, that's the goal and that's the hope, and we're still waiting. So hopefully, I'm still hoping that we don't have to wait that much longer. But yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah. And, you know, it's unfortunate. Like I said, to me, it's kind of shocking that that the pimps of the world are kind of viewed as like the hero almost. I mean, it's weird.
Yeah, well, yes.
Which actually leads me to my next question, because obviously, you know, the attitude of the bad girl. You know, elaborate on that for you. In your mind, what is this attitude about the bad girl? And then I'll tell you what my attitude about the bad girl is.
Well, the attitude about the bad girl is that, you know, she's very sexually open. She does whatever she wants. You know, she can satisfy a man, you know, any way he pleases. She smokes, she drinks, she hangs out late. You know, and the whole term that you even hear it in popular culture, she's a freak and all of this. That's what a bad girl is. You know, she always does, you know, things opposite, things that she shouldn't do. You know, that's really what a bad girl is in my mind. But in reality, you know, that girl, even if she is doing all those things, she's not doing it willingly. There's something there, whether it's in her past, in her life, in her mind, there's always a reason why a girl acts like that. She doesn't just, like, if that perception makes it sound like she just woke up one day and said, yeah, I'm going to do all these things and be really bad, and that's how I'm going to live my life. It never happens like that.
So you think that pop culture plays a serious role in the bad girl attitude, though, right?
Of course. They play a serious role in the trafficking issue. Yeah, I really do.
Mm-hmm. Well, elaborate on that. I'm curious to know, as far as trafficking goes.
Because it is the whole pimp culture. It is the whole pimp culture. You see a lot of these female pop stars making videos, swinging on poles. You see, music videos of men dressed in nice suits while women are dancing around them naked. You know, I mean, that right there just sets the precedence of how to view a woman.
Right.
You know, I mean, just look at most of the rap and hip hop videos. I don't really need to, and even the pop videos,
sure.
I don't really need to say much. You know, and it's getting out there to young kids, and it's poisoning their minds, and they're thinking, and even the girls are thinking that behavior is okay, and those videos are designed to make young girls think that behavior is okay, and it's not okay. You know, and that plays a huge part in society and in the way people perceive what young girls are and how they should be. And, oh, she's acting that way. She wants to act that way. No, that's not really the reason.
Right. Well, I mean, I could say that, aside from obviously just one specific genre of music or entertainment, you have these pop singers and these girls and these Miley Cyruses and these people trying to shock at all times to sell records and everything. I mean, it's crazy to me. I mean, I have two nieces that are very young, and I certainly wouldn't want them growing up to admire that sort of behavior.
Right. Well, unfortunately, that's the way it's designed. Listen, it's not just pop and rap and hip-hop. There are a lot of rock, hard rock, heavy rock bands. You know, they may do it in a different way, but they still dehumanize women in their music.
Sure, yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, it's all part of, freedom of expression and everything, but I think that...
freedom of expression at the expense of the women. So that's where I say, where do we draw the line? Is it freedom of expression or is it hate speech? Because if you listen to some of the things that they say, that's... nothing good comes of it. It's hate speech.
Right. Yeah. No, you're right. It's and like I said, it's very easily overlooked. I don't think people really they understand a lot of their actions. I mean, I think that it's the same way with people. With homophobic comments. I feel like a lot of times you just say things because you're kind of used to it. You say, "Oh, that's this is gay or that was gay," and now you kind of, at least now it's all coming out that people are being a little more mindful of things like that, and it's unfortunate.
Right.
That with trafficking and with the sexualization of women at this point, it's not really changing, because I feel like it's just so pushed and crammed into, pop culture in your face. I mean, you just don't have a choice.
Exactly.
Now, while we only have a couple minutes left, Samantha, I did want to ask you a question about the recent events, obviously, very unfortunate and crazy events that occurred, in Paris last weekend.
Yeah.
With everything happening over there and everything in general, I mean, what is it in your professional experience with this? Is there a correlation between trafficking and terrorism?
Absolutely. The events that happened in Paris were absolutely heartbreaking. My heart really, really hurt for those people there. I mean, just the people that have lost loved ones. It's really horrible. But, as we've seen with groups like ISIS, trafficking was one of their tactics. They just have this ideology that, women are their property and that they can do with them what they want. So they would just take them, they would marry them off to fighters, and then the fighters would sell them to other men, and this is really just all for the purposes of sexual gratification, because in Islam, you know, you can't just take a woman and have sex with her like that. You have to marry her, because
right.
their belief is that, you know, they want to look good in the sight of God. So if they marry her, it's okay. But what they're doing is anything but, you know, being a husband to her. You know, they're using her for their sexual gratification, no matter how perverse it is. And then they discard her after that. They divorce her. And then they just send her to somebody else. And so it does play a prevalent role. It plays a prevalent role with terrorist groups, with gangs, with mafias. Everywhere that there's organized crime or that there's terrorist groups, there is going to be trafficking. Always.
Yeah.
And anywhere.
Now, is that, you know, is this something that you take as a threat? I mean, do you take the whole recent thing, you know, the recent occurrences with terrorism, and obviously how it's just getting kind of
mm-hmm.
out of hand now? I mean, clearly, something is
right.
is just happening over and over again. But is this
right.
something that, in your mind, that trafficking you're going to see a lot more of now with the more that it's out there? I mean, obviously, you know better than I do as far
right.
as the numbers, that it's
right.
it's been there.
Well, what I will say is that, you know, there could be, and there kind of have been, some, you know, groups of young men in the United States that either are, or I should say, pledge themselves to Islam, and they do take girls, and they traffic them in the United States. They do that. I mean, some of them, you know, they were born here, but, you know, they kind of form their own group, and they become Muslim, and then they use that, you know, as, I don't know if you could say it's an excuse, but they use that and say, in our religion, it's okay, and they just basically use that so they can take girls and sell them, and I've heard of stories like that. And so what I'm afraid of is that a lot of copycat groups will start to pop up here, and they will start to do the same thing. That's my biggest fear, but hopefully
yeah.
not. But, you know, it does, yeah, it's something that's going to affect everyone. I mean, we've seen it with Boko Haram, we've seen it with ISIS, and who knows who else is going to do it, you know. I mean, so we're all connected. We're a global universe now. I mean, there is no us and them. We're all together in this. So it's quite possible that we could see that happen more and more in this country.
And again, I mean, I ask, you know, you, in your opinion, you know, what can people do? I mean, obviously, this you would hope that it's not happening here in America, you know, with terrorists. I mean,
right.
we know that there's definitely some people here that are anti-America,
mm-hmm.
but you wouldn't think that they necessarily could do any sort of trafficking damage, right?
I don't know. Not here. I don't think so. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's really something for, like, you know, Homeland Security and the Counterterrorism Unit to really look at.
Right.
I can't really say. I mean, you know, as far as those types of activities, I mean, I would think that, you know, the FBI has a lot of information. But what I will say is that the unfortunate reality is that if there is that kind of terrorist activity here in the United States, the unfortunate reality is that they will look at the terrorist part but not the trafficking part. So they will look to stop the terrorism but totally forget about, you know, any girls that have been forced or caught up in it.
That's true.
You know, that's the unfortunate reality.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's scary because I didn't necessarily even think of something like that. And I think that's right. I mean, you couldn't be more accurate. I think it's just, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's overlooked again. It's once again, like I said,
yes.
this is something that
mm-hmm.
before, you know, before I began
mm-hmm.
this series with you, I didn't really know much about the statistics of trafficking and how bad it was. And you named
mm-hmm.
a lot of different instances where, you know, I would think, wow, you know, I didn't even think that was something like that. But, you know, it turned
mm-hmm.
out to be that way. So, Samantha, unfortunately, we're running out of time for this episode. I do want, real quick, if you could just share with everybody the best ways to contact you, that
mm-hmm.
would be great. And then we'll have you back on in 2 weeks.
Great. So you can contact me at info@beasister2asister.org Or if you go on our website, www.beasister2assister.org, there's a constant contact form that you can fill out, and that will come directly to me as well.
Perfect. Well, again, Samantha, thank you for coming on tonight. I hope you have a
thank
good
you.
Couple of weeks, and I look forward to having you back on.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Well, everybody, again, check out beassister2assister.org, and I hope everyone has a good week. And from everyone here at CMC Radio, this is Rob May saying we'll see you soon. Take care, everybody.